Minnesota House Committee on Public Safety and Criminal Justice Reform for the 92nd State Legislative Session will come to order, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
I'm here.
Vice Chair Frazier.
Present.
Rep. Johnson.
Present.
Representative Edelson. Representative Edelson. Representative Feist.
Present.
Representative Grossel.
Present.
Representative Hollins.
Present.
Representative Hewitt.
Present.
Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne present.
Representative Long.
Present.
Representative Lucero.
Present.
Representative Mueller, excused. Representative Novotny.
Novotny present.
Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill present.
Representative Pinto.
Present.
Representative Poston.
Present.
Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh present.
Representative Vang.
Present.
Representative Shung.
Present.
Representative Edelson.
Present.
And that concludes roll call. Chair, quorum is present.
Very well. Well, the quorum present, we'll begin. This hearing is conducted under Minnesota House Rule 10.01, allowing for hearings to be held via use of distance voting, remote electronic voting, or voting by other means to protect the health and safety of the public, staff, and members. This hearing is live streamed on the House website and can be accessed via the committee page. Those wishing to offer public testimony can contact via email the committee administrator, Mr. Jamal Lundy, 24 hours prior to a hearing. That email address is also available on our committee page. I know this is going to come as a shock to members, but I don't have a theme for today. So if anyone has a good theme, let the chair know. But we do have some good bills. So that's always a good thing. We're, as members know, we're in the first deadline week. We will be hearing bills today and at a regular time, same time as today, tomorrow, on Thursday, where we will, let me not get in trouble because I think our agenda is moving around, but perhaps the important thing for your management of time is I will not be scheduling bills to be heard and acted upon on Friday, which is our deadline day. There will be a budget presentation from three of our boards that we have oversight of. Obviously, I want members to come and listen to our boards, but I also know many of us are going to be pressed on that final day to be present at various committees to cast their votes. And so please avail yourselves of that time so you can meet that duty. With that, members, I'll ask Vice Chair Frazier for adoption of the minutes of March 18th.
So moved, Mr. Chair.
Very well. Motion is before us. Discussion. Lee Johnson.
Voice vote is fine.
Very well. Thank you, sir. All in favor of adopting the minutes of March 18th, please say aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion prevails, and the minutes of March 18th are hereby adopted. Now, members, the first bill up is our very own Representative Hewitt, House File 33. And I believe, Representative Hewitt, your motion is to refer House File 33 to the Committee on Judiciary.
That is correct, Mr. Chair.
Very well. The motion is before us, Representative Hewitt, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a real sad day to have to bring a bill like this before you, but unfortunately, the time is now. House File 33 has the amendment attached, but is not going to be added until my next stop, hopefully, if you decide that this bill is worthy to go that way. What House File 33 is a basically, it's going to become an unruly fan bill. I'm referring to sporting events for our children and young adults, all the way down to the Little League level, to the high school level. For some reason, over the last several years, we have been seeing the angst at basketball, football, and other sporting events by the fans get much worse. And what I mean is not just, I'm okay, as you guys all know, I'm an official. I'm okay with saying bad call ref or maybe even a little louder than that. But what I'm not okay is when they use profanity and vulgar terms and racial epithets. And I just don't think that's acceptable. I've had games where that has happened. I've had games where they've attacked players on the floor with verbal threats. And unfortunately, we just had a game up in Detroit Lakes that we have an official that not only was being verbally harassed during the whole game, but the individual threw popcorn at him and then came on the floor and assaulted him. We have had a number of hockey games that this has happened to recently where they throw things at the refs on the ice. We got to stop the behavior. And I hate to say that we have to legislate behavior, but my bill will basically give the Amateur Sports Commission a way to levy a fine against an individual that they receive a referral from either the state high school league or the commissioners of Little League to do such. We have not set the fee on the fine yet. I'm thinking around $1,000 because we really got to send a message. It's a sad day. I mean, what the referee's job is to do is to protect the players, most of all, their safety. And it's about the experience our children have on the field or on the court. And so they have the most positive experience they can. Win or lose, they should walk away saying, you know what, that was a good event. And right now, we're not having that. I'm going to share a quick story with you, and then I have Roger Arneson, the distinguished lawyer from the Minnesota High School League here, if he wants to say a few words on this. This is not a bill that was brought by them or brought by any individuals. That's important to know. This is a Hewitt original, but I'm sure I've heard from many of you over the last few days about how you personally have had times to ref and how you've been an umpire or something like that, where you know exactly what I'm talking about. A couple of years ago, I was on the football field and we had an irate fan in the stands and it was getting out of control. Referees tried to avoid even making eye contact with people like this. And what was sad about this incident and why it continuously plays over and over, the son came up to me at a timeout and said, I am so sorry, my dad is out of control. Now, to have a kid do that is just pathetic. And so we need to make sure that we protect our kids, and sometimes even from their parents trying to be great, but maybe they're not being so great here. So, Mr. Chair, with that, I would love to give my testifier a little time here, too.
Very well. It's my my pleasure to call forward my old friend Roger Aronson from the Minnesota High School League. I haven't interacted with you much since I took over public safety here, but it's good to have you in my committee, our committee here, Mr. Aronson. Come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
Mr. Chair and members, Roger Aronson. I represent the Minnesota State High School League. And Mr. Chair, it's a pleasure. You and I have been on... done a lot of work for a lot of years on a lot of issues. And it's always been very positive. When you started out today, you talked about having a theme for the committee. And, you know, one of the, I think the key thing that we want to bring to you today, what we're working on, and obviously with a lot of issues about behavior at events right now, is the movement to create a culture of respect in our schools, respect at our events, to others, to officials, to everybody. And we actually, I think the committee would be very pleased to hear, we have a major initiative that we've been working on for a couple of weeks. We're working with the Minneapolis Foundation, with the High School Leagues Foundation as well, and working with students and listening sessions around the state. This bill, particularly towards our officials, we work really hard to attract officials. It's not easy to get people to do these events. It's largely volunteer. No one's doing this for the money. It's very, very small stuff, but it's the culture and being part of it. What we do like about Representative Hewitt's bill, and we've talked about this, is starting to make a record of events so that we have data to say, here's some of the scope of the problem. because for every one of the Detroit Lake incidents of the throwing popcorn, there might have been 10 of those, you know, in other areas that we don't know about. And when I say we, I mean the we as a community, as we're trying to make these events positive for kids. This is a really good discussion. We think this is the part of the discussion, the part of the amendment that says, you know, the league would report instance of this. We're going to start gathering these reports. We're looking at setting up some mandatory, not that's maybe the wrong phrase, but data reporting by school districts of events as they happen at schools so that we know about them and can establish appropriate protocols to respond to them. This started out as a criminal bill. The civil fine is another idea on that. But just having this hearing is a very positive step in the right direction. I recognize a lot of the other players in this committee as well, who've spoken both privately about issues and publicly about them. And we think that's going to all, as I said, move towards this culture of respect. That's where we need to be. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Aronson. I don't see any other testifiers, so why don't we open this up for committee discussion. And first on the list, we have Representative DeBotany.
Hey, Chair Mariani, thank you. I was told there was going to be a DE amendment. Or has that already been addressed?
Representative Huat?
Representative Navani, it's not going to be adopted in this, but it should be posted, I believe. That's what I understand. Can I phone a friend here and see if that has actually been done?
It's posted.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, it is posted on your website. It is posted, Mr. Chair.
Let me check with staff to see if we am not seeing notes on. Well, hold on a second. Oh, so this amendment was posted late, Representative Otney, so I believe we're not going to be able to act on it. However, our motion, if the committee is willing, is to move this to Judiciary Committee. My belief is, and I think it's appropriate for you to inquire, Representative Otney, I believe the author's intent would be to then move that amendment in that committee.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hewitt.
Yeah, that's my full attempt. And I really wanted you guys to see the DE because I want you to see where this bill is going and what I want to be as transparent as possible.
It might be good to describe it, perhaps, particularly given Representative Navani's inquiry.
Definitely. Representative Navani, are you okay with me doing that at this point?
Yes, please, because it substantially, you know, changes the direction that the bill's going.
Thank you, Representative Navani. I definitely will. The DE amendment basically changes the bill from criminal to civil. It makes a civil penalty where I had a criminal penalty before. This bill has been held for quite a while because a lot of people don't feel we should have went criminal. The truth is, though, the bill does not take away the ability for the perpetrator to be charged. The perpetrator still could be charged with assault. The only thing it's probably going to do is take away right now, the current law states, and this was put in by the Honorable Representative Swigum years ago, he's also a sports official or was, that the high school league can impose a 1-year suspension of a fan if it comes in. And I don't know if that's ever been done, but it's a real hard one to enforce. So that one will probably go away, but the DE basically turns it to civil. The only one that can impose a civil penalty in this is, with the great help of our wonderful research, is the Amateur Sports Commission. It cannot be done by the high school league. The Amateur Sports Commission is a government agency, so that's why it ended up going there. As far as the penalty goes, I don't think it's in there yet, but it's going to be about $1,000, and they're going to have the right to appeal also. Did that kind of answer the questions, Representative Navani?
Representative Navani.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Yes, and that was going to be my point also, that even with the DE, that there still would be disorderly conduct or other charges that could be addressed. But going to the question then with the DE being in consideration is, where does that fine money go?
Well, Christopher, if you want.
My intention right now would be it goes to the Amateur Sports Commission for the administration of this. They're not a well-funded government entity. I found that out. So I'll have more of those answers in judiciary when we get there. If we get there, I shouldn't assume that. Right now, it probably would go to the Sports Commission itself.
Representative Odney.
Thank you, Chair Mariani, and thank you, Chair Hewitt, for the answer. And with the refereeing reference in mind here, you're probably right about that. So, as referee's always right. Thank you, Chair.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Adi. And Mr. Aronson, I take it when you were offering your testimony earlier, you were thinking about the DE1 amendment. And if not, or so, you know, just give you an opportunity just to say a few words about that switch.
No, Mr. Chair, it was to the DE1. We think that's a real solid direction that's going.
I thought so. Okay, very well. Thank you. Representative Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Hewitt, thank you for the conversations we had yesterday on this bill as well. I like the concept. I do have had a little bit of concern on it originally with the original amendment. I heard you were talking about dropping it to a $1,000 fine, which I agree is much better because currently in the DE, it's a $5,000 fine on the individual, which actually is a higher fine than a misdemeanor or a gross misdemeanor offense on top of that. And also if a school official is hurt, it's already covered in the current statutes where it'd be a gross misdemeanor for demonstrative bodily harm. One suggestion I would suggest after reading this over is if the civil penalties are enforced, that the money would go to us, you'd put into the bill a special account by the Amateur Sports Commission to be used for youth sports. I think some people would understand that better. And it for those that did lose their temper and caused a ruckus, they would be more apt to just pay the fine knowing that it'd be going towards youth sports and not try to appeal it.
Representative, you're right.
I'm totally open to that, Representative Johnson. Thank you for that advice. One of the things that they have over there, and I think it's for youth sports, is they're also doing something similar to the high school league of working with an officials program that goes totally towards the youth sports and the little league. But I'm willing to work with you on that. I think that's a great idea if we earmark it. Thank you.
Very well. And I know that Representative Johnson, you are and judiciary, so hopefully that'll provide you another or a venue whereby you and Representative Hewitt could further pursue that.
Yeah. I Representative Hewitt, I appreciate that.
Johnson.
If for those of you have ever been to Sturgis Week, what they've done out there is anybody that gets a citation or any type of tickets out there, the funds go directly to the school in that area. So it doesn't jam up the courts and people just pay it because it's going to, they know the fine is going towards the kids and they have a lot less issues that way.
Very well. Vice Chair Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hewitt, for bringing this bill. I think we talked a little bit and I mentioned that I like this bill because I have a young daughter that was a ref for a while. She is no longer a ref, but part of it was because of the treatment that she was exposed to from bad behaving parents during the games that she reffed, which was unfortunate. So I think this is a good bill to help deal with accountability and to help create a better environment for our kids and for our students, which is very important. Mr. Aronson, good to see you. I do have a question for you. And we've talked earlier too, particularly with the situation that happened in my district with Cooper High School when they were down in New Prague. My question is, you know, districts already have the ability to trespass bad behaving individuals from their property. Do we have an idea how often districts actually use that power? And I know I'm putting you on the spot, but if you have any idea, I'd like to know.
Mr. Chair?
Mr. Aronson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Fraser, and I appreciate working with you on this, these issues, and that we're going to continue to get better. That's a great question, because principals use that. The principal has the authority to say you cannot be here for up to a year, and that is not appealable. I don't have numbers per se, but I would say that that is frequently put in place. We do a lot of training with principals about how to make that work, you know, with that trespass notice.
Yeah.
I have to say we are very pleased with the status of the trespass statute in Minnesota. But our thought is we need to track and have that data more readily, particularly with the incident. You know, you and I visited, we know that the incident we're discussing, for every one we know about, there's 20 we don't.
Yeah.
And we got to get to where we know, so we get past this kind of, hey, this really isn't an issue we need to be dealing with. We need to get to this is an issue that we all need to be dealing with. Absolutely. So our hope is that we're going to put some things in place that say there's an after game report, and it probably would make sense for all the things that we report out of the education committee that we'd report the number of those trespass notices that are issued by the principals as well.
Vice Chair Fraser.
Thank you, Mr. Aronson. I would appreciate if we start collecting that data. And you're right. The ones, it's so many that we don't hear about, that our kids are exposed to this quite frequently. We just don't hear about them. We not only hear about the ones that make the news, but I'm probably pretty sure there's plenty out there that we don't hear about. And it will be good to have that data to help us as we move forward. I'm looking forward to see the work that the High School League and some of the other associations are going to do moving forward. Like I said, it's vitally important for our kids. They should have safe environments when they're participating in their sports or other extracurricular activities. Thank you.
Indeed. Thank you, Representative Fraser. Any others? All right. Very well. Representative Hewitt, why don't you close this out?
Yeah, members. Thank you for the discussion. I'm asking for your support on this to move it forward. I'm really, Lee Johnson, we talked yesterday about you actually being in my space where you've done a few baseball games. It's interesting your analogy of comparing this event to Sturgis. So just kind of curious there. But anyways, I've never been to Sturgis, so I shouldn't say that, but it just brings up questions. This is about our kids, and I want to share one last story with you. I've been talking to officials over the last 2 years or 3 years since I've been in the House, and I told them that, you know, I really want to work on something, and their point back to me was, you know, they're not going to do anything. We've tried this route before, and nothing happened, and so I don't want to walk away from this year saying we didn't do anything, or we didn't consider it, or we didn't try to do something. So at least get those officials saying that, you know, we're thinking about them, that we need more of them. Any of you on this Zoom or any people listening out there, think about being an official. It's a great time, but please, let's support them. Thank you, committee, and I'd really appreciate your support on this.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. A good bill and a timely issue, for sure. And thank you, Mr. Aronson, for your testimony today, as well as for your suggestion on a theme on respect. I like that. Always good to see you, Roger. All right. With that,
Representative Hewitt
renews his motion that House File 33 be referred to the Committee on Judiciary, and the clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani.
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Fraser.
Aye.
Vice Chair Fraser, aye. Lee Johnson.
Aye.
Lee Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson.
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist.
Aye.
Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel.
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins.
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt. Representative Hewitt.
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller? Excused. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh.
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang.
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Shung.
Aye.
Representative Shung, aye. Chair, with 18 ayes and one excused, that concludes roll call.
Very well. With 18 ayes, zero nays, and one excuse, the motion does prevail, and House File 33 is referred to the Committee on Judiciary. Thank you again, Representative Yuan. Members, next we have House File 3702, Representative Long. I believe your motion is to refer House File 3702 to the Committee on Ways and Means.
If that is your preference, Mr. Chair, or lay it over, I think was what I had.
Oh, I see we're going to possibly include this. All right. So that would normally be the motion, we'll have that motion before us with the understanding that we're going to be laying this over for possible inclusion. Very well. Representative Long, your bill is before us.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair. County attorneys from across the state rely on assistance from the Criminal Division of the Attorney General's Office in prosecuting criminal cases. The AG's office does not have original jurisdiction in criminal cases, meaning they are only helping at the request of county attorneys. 3 years ago, the AG's office had one dedicated criminal prosecutor. Now there are three hardworking but overstretched attorneys, and this bill would simply expand the office by seven attorneys along with two legal assistants. That would mean an additional 70 to 85 criminal cases per year. And these cases would almost entirely come from greater Minnesota, where county attorney offices are smaller and less well-resourced. I would also note that this would return the office to levels of support it had provided in previous years before the office saw some of its funding reduced and these functions diminished. Increased staff could accept county attorney requests in cases involving violent or complex crimes, sex trafficking, or cross-county crimes, to name a few. We have letters from a number of county attorneys that were submitted to the committee. I just wanted to note one example that was cited from the Freeborn County attorney of an attempted murder case where the Attorney General's office is assisting with the case where it involved three local victims, including a policeman. And the Freeborn County attorney noted that without that help, it would be straining their local office beyond the breaking point. And with that, Mr. Chair, I'd like to turn it over to the three testifiers we have with us today.
Very well. And first on the list is my former Minnesota House colleague and former U.S. Congress person and current Attorney General for the state of Minnesota, Mr. Keith Ellison. Attorney General Ellison, please come forward, state your name for the record, and give us your testimony.
My name is Keith Ellison. I'm the Attorney General for the state of Minnesota. And Chair Mariani, I want to thank you. I want to thank Vice Chair Frazier, and I want to thank Ranking Member Johnson and all members. Thank you for the chance to testify on House File 3702. Special thanks to Representative Long for introducing this bill. It is a bill to appropriate funding for the Criminal Division for the Attorney General's Office. You know, we talk about statistics and we talk about numbers all the time, but really prosecution and criminal prosecutions are really about people. Former Minnesota Viking Barry Bennett and his wife Carol were pillars of the community in Long Prairie. And Barry was raised in St. Paul, and after his NFL career, had been a physical education teacher in Long Prairie. Gray Eagle High School until his retirement. His wife, Carol, was a tax preparer, and people went to her to help them around April 15th, and she was reliable, and both were great members of their church, First Baptist Church. Barry and Carol had six kids. Tragically, one of their sons murdered them. And that's when the Todd County Attorney's Office gave us a call at the Minnesota Attorney General's Office, and we were very willing to help. We understood the importance of stepping up, partnering with Todd County, a great office, but doesn't see a lot of homicide cases. And that's all that we see. Not all, but mostly what we see. They invited us to help prosecute this case, and we did. My office charged Mr. Dylan Bennett with two counts of first degree premeditated murder. Dylan at first pled not guilty. So prosecutors in my office did all the work preparing for trial. We did the grand jury work. We worked with investigators. We prepared the case. And they did such a thorough job that about a month before trial, Dylan changed his plea to guilty and accepted responsibility for what he did. Right now, he's serving a sentence of life in prison without parole. Now, this is an important case for everyone involved. It's critical. It was important that the case be handled with professionalism, with seriousness, understanding that with a family matter like this, it's critically important to the family and to the victims, and quite honestly, to be fair to the defendant, but to the entire community. And we did that to the best of our ability. As you know, original jurisdiction for almost all felony criminal prosecutions in Minnesota lies with county attorneys. That's a good thing. Crime is often felt locally, and therefore local county attorneys are in the very best position to be the original, be the first line of protection for communities. But under Minnesota statute section 8.01, a county attorney may ask the attorney general's office to prosecute a criminal matter. It is almost always the case that county attorneys who request this help are from greater Minnesota. Just as in the Todd County case, these greater Minnesota county attorney's offices have great talent. They have hardworking, committed public servants, and they do an excellent job of keeping their communities safe day in and day out. What they sometimes lack, however, are resources. What they sometimes lack are prosecutors who've done these kind of serious felonies and the experience and expertise to prosecute these complex crimes like the murder of Barry and Carol Bennett. This is where the criminal division of the Minnesota Attorney General's office comes in. But let me say, it's not only in times when there's a resource deficit, sometimes it's when there's a conflict. There are other times when it's appropriate to pull in the Attorney General's office. And I will tell you that in the last 3 years, with only three full-time prosecutors, we've investigated, made charging decisions about, and prosecuted 33 cases of murder, manslaughter, criminal vehicular homicide, and criminal sexual assault. And we've had outstanding results. 18 of the 20 counties where the criminal division handled these cases are in greater Minnesota. Only two are in the metro area. When the criminal division of the Attorney General's office takes cases that county attorneys send to us, we bring accountability to perpetrators of crime, healing to victims of crime, and to communities, and particularly like Long Prairie, where they are occurred. We also bring professionalism with due regard to our criminal justice system and the rights that defendant is must have. And we do our duty to make Minnesota a safer place. This small but important and mighty team has made and continues to make major contributions to public safety in every corner of our state. And we're proud to be partnering with our local partners. Unfortunately, the previous administration had a different vision for the office and decided to significantly reduce resources for the criminal division. This cut into the level of service that the office could provide. And since I've been at the office, we have been trying to rebuild our criminal division, which I view as vitally important. 25 years ago, the criminal division had 12 full-time prosecutors. When I became attorney general 3 years ago, the division had one full-time prosecutor and some folks stepped in on a part-time basis. I've used existing resources to add two more full-time prosecutors. So we've gone from one to three, but we haven't done it with more money. We've done it with just making some decisions. And of course, other things that we need to do, have had to be sacrificed, but public safety I believe is a core function of government. With more funding from the legislature, we could rebuild the office's capacity to help counties prosecute violent crime and complex cases that may be beyond the scope of counties with the given set of limited resources that they have. One area where we can be particularly helpful is in the area of prosecuting sex trafficking. We know that it's going on. It is happening. We have begun rebuilding our program to be able to prosecute these cases. In fact, we are grateful to McKnight Foundation, which recently gave us a grant to begin the rebuilding process so that we could prosecute these critical cases. These cases require a great deal of expertise and resources to bring to trial. The reasons why are that the victims are often traumatized and abused and not always in a position or willing to come forward. You need seasoned investigators to work on these matters, and you need prosecutors who understand the damage that is inflicted on the victims of sex trafficking. So as I mentioned, my office is already receiving help, but only on a preliminary basis from a McKnight Foundation grant for only $10,000. That's just a planning grant and doing some training and some other things. Very important, we're grateful for it. But in order to really make a dent in this very serious problem, we need help from you. With your help, we'll be able to offer this capacity, to county attorneys that need it. And I can assure you that many would agree that we do need it. With more resources, we also can build the capacity to prosecute crimes that harm Minnesotans' economic security. County attorneys are asking for this help. I'm pleased that this bill has the full support of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, a group of hardworking, dedicated public servants who work in partnership to preserve public safety. You'll hear from some of these folks today, and I'm proud to be their colleague. In conclusion, I'd like to say that this marks the third time in 3 years that I've come to the legislature with this request. Before this most recent spike in violent crime, we were here asking for more support for this very purpose. I proposed it in 2019, in 2021, and now in 2022. And I'm grateful that each of the past two times, the House has fully approved it. Thank you. On behalf of the people of our state, I thank you. However, the Senate has not approved it. And twice now, it has not survived Congress. We're hoping that changes for the safety and the protection of Minnesotans all over our state. This is a moment when all Minnesotans are concerned about public safety. There's a lot of talk around the Capitol about the need to address it. And this is exactly the kind of discussion that we need. It is fair and it is proper to be talking about how we make our state safer. Public safety is all of our business, and crime should not ever be the subject of political gamesmanship. Helping county attorneys hold offenders accountable and bring justice to victims should be the point. And I believe that we have the capacity to reach bipartisan unity to get this done. I ask not only for your support for Representative Long's bill, I ask you to advocate for it in conference negotiations with the Senate. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I will close my remarks, but I wanna thank you, Mr. Chair. I wanna thank the ranking member. I wanna thank Vice Chair Frazier and all of the members. And I'd also like to thank all of the members of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association for their dedicated service to our state. Thank you.
Thank you, Attorney General Ellison, and hopefully you can stick around a bit if there might be questions.
I will.
I know you're
certainly busy, I will.
Busy, but that might be helpful as well. Thank you. With that, we do have from Cook County, Molly Hicken, the Cook County Attorney.
Good afternoon. My name is Molly Hicken. I'm the Cook County Attorney. My office here in Grammarie serves under 6,000 residents of Cook County, along with the much larger visitor population that comes up each year to enjoy this area. The effort to provide adequate resources to the AG for a complete criminal division is one of three priorities of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association, the other two being prosecutor training funding and our fentanyl legislation. Our association is united in the great need for assistance from the AG's office, especially for county attorneys' offices in rural and outstate Minnesota like mine. I'm one of two attorneys in this office. Half of Minnesota counties have just three or fewer attorneys in their county attorneys' offices. 24 have two or fewer. We're line attorneys who get great court experience representing the state of Minnesota in criminal and child protection cases, but we also work as general counsel for our counties. We practice in contract law and zoning law and a dozen other civil areas of law. We sit in county board meetings and we represent our counties in important negotiations. We do get significant trial experience as rural county attorneys, but we do not and we cannot specialize in the most serious of criminal cases, such as murder, human trafficking, and white collar crime. These simply don't come up frequently enough in our caseloads for us to develop an expertise like prosecutors can in larger metro counties. These cases can also easily eat up all of our resources in the small offices, leaving nothing left for the remaining legal work that our counties need. So this is why rural county attorneys and their constituents need you to support an AG budget that will add assistant AGs to the criminal division at the AG's office. Criminal division AAGs can take serious cases at the request of county attorneys and provide the expertise in serious crime that crime victims in rural Minnesota deserve, especially when they have lost loved ones or lifetime savings. The criminal division at the AG's office is now taking homicide cases at the request of rural county attorneys, and I would imagine even just those are stressing the resources of the division. With increased funding, the AG's resources can be available to county attorneys for the prosecution of white-collar crime, large-scale drug manufacture and sales, and sex trafficking. The complex litigation involved in these prosecutions can quickly overwhelm smaller county attorneys' offices to the detriment of providing justice to victims. The AG's office needs the resources available so that it can heed the call when we need help. Thank you.
Thank you, County Attorney Hicken, and hopefully you can stick around a little bit as well for possible questions. Thank you. Very well. Our next testifier is Clearwater County Attorney Catherine Lorenzbach. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you all for having me. My name is Catherine Lorenzbach, and I'm the Clearwater County Attorney. I wanted to testify about my experiences with the Attorney General's Criminal Division and support their request for funding. This additional funding will provide greater access to justice for victims in rural areas and support the county attorneys in outstate Minnesota. The Clearwater County Attorney's Office is a lot like the Cook County Attorney's Office. We're small, we have just two attorneys and two support staff, and we handle a wide range of cases from civil to criminal to general counsel for the county. When I took office, Matt Frank with the Attorney General's Office called me and told me if there was ever a time that we needed help, all we had to do was call. Between 2020 and 2021, our county was rocked with two murder cases, a school resource officer who was sexually abusing children at the school, and the Line 3 cases. These cases were complex, they were time consuming, and they were eating up all the resources and time of both myself and my assistant. One of the murders necessitated a grand jury, and additional victims started coming forward with allegations of criminal sexual conduct against that school resource officer. This was in addition to the COVID backlog and our standard caseload. So we reached out to the Attorney General's office and took them up on their offer for help. Help came in the form of Assistant Attorney General John Gross, David Voigt, and Aaron Eldridge. The resources, support, and knowledge base that they brought to these high stakes cases resulted in successful prosecutions. Their office is a wealth of resources for issues such as extradition or writs or expungement or forfeiture practice, and they're always willing to answer the phone and provide as much help as they can. It's vital for us to have a robust criminal staff to assist smaller offices like my own in complex prosecutions and just have them available for questions, even on less serious cases. As Attorney Hicken stated, although we get significant trial experience, we aren't able to specialize like the more populous counties do. So we don't have a homicide unit. We don't have a criminal sexual conduct unit or a white collar crime unit. We have to be prepared to handle whatever comes through the door. And without the assistance of the AG's office, it's a lot harder for smaller counties like us to achieve parity with the metro counties. So this funding is vital in serving the interests of outstate Minnesota and the prosecution of these serious cases. And I can say my office has truly benefited from their help. So I thank you for your time, and I hope that you'll support this bill.
Very well, thank you, County Attorney Lorsbach. I do see another testifier. Oh no, I see available for questions, David Voigt, the Deputy Attorney General. Okay, very well. Chair Long, I don't see any other testifiers, so probably a good time to open up for committee discussion.
Did Bob Small want to testify, or is he here for questions as well?
My note says that Mr. Voigt is here for available for questions.
Great.
You can certainly call him forward if you wish him to testify.
I saw a thumbs up, so I think we're good, Mr. Chair.
All right, very well. Why don't we open this up for questions then? We'll begin with Representative Paulson.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. My questions are for the bill author. Representative Long, I think your motion was to lay this bill over, and it seems to me like this should be making a stop in judiciary. It also should be making a stop in state government finance, because state government finance has the jurisdiction over the AG's budget. Have you thought about, you know, the bill going to those two committees?
Chair Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the question, Representative Poston. So the bill was heard in state government finance last year as part of their budget discussions. So it's already been heard in this biennium in state government finance. I don't believe it does need to go to judiciary. I don't think the funding is for the criminal division and to do public safety work. So I think that falls squarely within this committee's prerogative.
Representative Poston.
Thank you, Representative Long. Thank you, Chair.
Very well. Others? Representative Grossel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And looking at this on the face of it, it doesn't look like a bad idea. I remember working Narcotics and Violent Crimes Task Force as a deputy sheriff. And being a deputy from Clearwater County myself on those task forces, it was much appreciated during the times when meth labs were running amok. And so the AG's office would have assistance available to us. And I guess I just have a couple questions, and either the author or AG Ellison or even Bob Small, if he would, from County Attorney's Association, if any of those three, if jump in to answer, if you would, I guess how many new FTEs would be added to the Attorney General's office?
Let me begin with the author of the bill, and then you can certainly refer it to others.
Sure. So I think Attorney General Ellison stated there are three currently in the division, and there would be seven added by this bill.
Seven added. Okay. All right. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Looking at it again, these are attorneys that would be there when asked to assist, correct? Representative Long?
Chair Long.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Grossel. Yes, the Attorney General's office does not have original jurisdiction in these criminal matters. And so these would be at the request of county attorneys, and that's when they would be able to step in to assist, like we heard from County Attorney Lorsbach and County Attorney Hicken.
And I guess Mr. Small, I'm sorry, Mr. Chair.
Quite all right.
And Mr. Small, is that your understanding of it as well?
Mr. Small, if you can state your name for the record.
Mr. Chair, my name is Robert Small. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota County Attorneys Association. Representative Grossel, that is my understanding.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, members, Representative Grasso did get into one of my questions, but I want to expand on that as well. I'm not sure who the person is from the Attorney General's office at the moment who's here to answer some questions. But when Attorney General Ellison was talking, he was talking about 7 new lawyers or attorneys to handle this, to assist rural county attorneys mostly with these cases. Is there any support staff as well besides those 7 attorneys? I would think that those attorneys would also need some support staff as well.
Chair Long?
Yes, Mr. Chair, there are 2 additional support staff, and I'm sure Attorney General Ellison could answer additional questions if on the staffing, if you'd like.
Attorney General?
Mr. Chair, yes, Representative Johnson, we were asking for 7 additional attorneys and 2 support staff. And I just want to be clear, by assist, we don't have original jurisdiction. We cannot go to a county and just prosecute a case. If we tried that, we'd be thrown out of court because we wouldn't have jurisdiction. But when county attorneys say, hey, we could use your help on this, we would be able to step up and help them. Whereas now what we have to do is they have to either go to another county and maybe sometimes they're stretched. But the counties would be in the driver's seat. So we would be assisting them only coming in at their request.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Ellison, I appreciate that. I believe it was Representative Grasso asked about new support staff, and we unfortunately left 2 support staff out of it on the answer. We do need all the information that we can have and to try to understand this. I still have some concerns on this because what issues that have happened in the past, the Attorney General's office does not have any jurisdiction in criminal matters that I've been able to find in statute unless they're called to assist in a county attorney. I know my county attorney relies sometimes on county attorneys in our area, and we work together. I remember when in my career in law enforcement, the Attorney General's office was a good asset with their criminal division to come forward and help out. Unfortunately, Attorney General Swanson ended that practice. But as far as I could find out, the funding never went away for that. It just diverted it to other areas, and now we're trying to backfill and fill those positions again that should never have been gone. One concern I have the way this bill is written is I would want to make sure if this goes forward that it is to assist county attorneys, especially in greater Minnesota, where we have a lot less financial resources and rely on other counties for assistance. So I would like it pretty much a little more stricter on where it's being used, and also to make sure that it's only to assist and not lead. If a county attorney is unable to perform the duties as the lead investigator, prosecution, it gives me other concerns. They are elected to do that and to perform their duties. If they have to call out to have somebody take over their cases, it gives me pause to wonder what's going on and why. Because they were elected to run for that position. And also we have qualification requirements in statute for the county attorney to be able to do their duties. Like I say, I do have questions on this, and I do believe this bill needs to also go to judiciary because it's dealing with prosecution. It also needs to go to state gov finance. I believe that's where the funding should be coming from. I think this bill definitely needs more work, and I think it should move on to the proper jurisdiction because the Attorney General's office under the state government, and not I don't believe it's under our funding jurisdiction.
Very well, thank you, Lee Johnson. You raised some important issues here. Vice Chair Frazier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Long, for bringing this bill. I mean, listening to the testimony here, it seems like it's vitally important that we provide these resources to help our county attorneys in Greater Minnesota. And I do want to speak just a bit. I have a question, but I want to speak just a bit to what Representative Johnson said. You know, I think it's rare that an elected county attorney actually tries any cases. In most situations, it is the assistant county attorneys that try the cases. And what I heard through testimony was they have some assistant county attorneys that are not well versed or experienced to try those cases, which is where the resources are needed to bring in assistant AGs to come and help with those cases. And I think that's probably important for us to provide those resources so that public safety can be carried out the way that it should be necessary for to keep those communities safe. But Representative Long, maybe the question goes to you or to AG Ellison. What happens if we don't pass this bill? I know that AG Ellison said he's been asking for these resources, you know, since he's been in office, and we haven't given them, and they still are trying to do the work with less resources. But what happens if we continue to not provide these resources?
And that's directed to the author.
Or AG Ellison, maybe AG Ellison.
Right. Either one.
Well, Mr. Chair, well, what will happen is that counties will do the best we can with what we don't have. I will tell you that in my humble view, there are cases that may not get prosecuted if there's not more overall prosecutorial resources to be brought. I was talking to, and I know Representative Pinto's on the meeting today. We Minnesota, like all states, we're not special, we're not worse, we're not better. We have a serious problem with sex trafficking in our state. These are not easy cases to be investigated. You know, a fair amount of wage theft cases go on and other financial crimes and scams. If we obviously are going to put our attention into the murders, the sexual assaults, the serious assaults, other cases like that, we will protect people's bodies first. But then what happens with the other more difficult to prosecute crimes? Quite honestly, we might not be able to get to some of those, and that'll mean that people who do wrong are allowed to continue doing it. And I will just say that the Attorney General's office, it's not like we took over since Skip Humphrey stopped being Attorney General. What we've done is simply we haven't asked for money every year before I got here. And so just through attrition and inflation, our budget it took a very significant dip. I don't know if Dave Voigt has the numbers, but we certainly can supply that to the committee. And as the office just got by with less and less, unfortunately, criminal prosecution got sacrificed. That's not acceptable to me. You know, as I sit down, and of course, Molly Hicken and Catherine Lorsbach and Bob Small, they all know the stories, and many of you do too, who've been in law enforcement. How do you sit there with a family member who has had a grievous crime committed to them? You know, it's a heartbreak to hear that. And we have a very strong need to make sure that victims are not ignored and that people do have somebody who cares and is going to do something about it. So my hat's off to all the county attorneys. I think they do a great job. I do recognize that all of us, we need to do public safety as a team, and the Attorney General wants to do their part on that team.
Very well. I'm wondering if perhaps any of the county attorneys here want to gander a a thought or response to Representative Frazier's question about what would happen, what impact, et cetera.
Chair Mariani?
County Attorney Hickman.
Thank you. Well, I can tell you that in our county, what it would mean is we would pursue a case as best we could. And we would certainly not abdicate our duties to do that. But all of the other legal work that this county requires would have to fall to the wayside because something has to give. And in these murder prosecutions, you know, defendants are often represented by a public defender with decades of murder trial experience. And yet the county attorney in the place of the prosecutor may have never tried a murder case, may have been trying cases for decades. And by the way, elected county attorneys in rural Minnesota are trying cases. I just sentenced a sex offender last month who I took to trial in December. So it's not for lack of trial experience. It's not for lack of skill, but these cases in which lives are lost, in which you know, lifetime savings are lost, in which bodies are being trafficked, are extremely complex. And with two support staff and two attorneys, we simply don't have the adequate resources to bring justice to crime victims.
Very well. Representative Frazier?
No further questions. And County Attorney Hicken, thank you for that clarification.
Very well.
No other questions.
Thank you. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I normally wouldn't speak after our lead, but I have just something kind of personal. Since the Clearwater County Attorney, Loris Bach, is here, I just wanted to personally thank her for trying the case of the murder of Don Swenson, who was my classmate. I'm a proud Bagley graduate of 1987, and Don Swenson and I were in band together for many, many years. And she was brutally murdered by her neighbor, who was high in meth and broke into her mother's home. She was actually in her mother's home and stabbed her in the neck right in front of an officer who was in pursuit. And he, in just February, just a few weeks ago, he was sentenced to life in prison. And so I just wanted to thank you for doing that. And I went to her funeral. And there are many people far and wide beyond Clearwater County that were impacted by her horrendous death and the invasion of her personal space and her privacy, and how this neighbor just burst into her mother's home and just brutally murdered her right in front of a police officer. And so I just want to personally thank you. He was sentenced to life in prison, and myself and Heidi, her sister, and a few others outside of Clearwater County were incredibly impacted by her death. And I just wanted to take this moment, since I'm on this committee and you're here, to just thank you personally. And I'm really glad that you got the resources that you needed to put him behind bars. And I'm just very grateful. Thank you for giving me this time, Chair.
Of course. County Attorney Lorsman.
Chair Mariani, Representative O'Neill, thank you. She was an incredible woman, and I just would like everyone to consider that we were able to obtain that result with the help of the Attorney General's office. That was Assistant Attorney John Gross. He did a phenomenal job. He came in and supported our office, and we were able to achieve the result with the grand jury and with the jury verdict because of the good work that they do and the support that they are able to provide for our communities.
Very well. Thank you, County Attorney Lorsbach, for your work. Representative O'Neill, my deep sympathies to you for the loss of your dear friend. And thank you for acknowledging the good work that our public servants, county attorneys, do in our state. Thank you. Representative Long, let's close this out, and then the chair is going to move away this bill over.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to extend my sympathies as well to Representative O'Neill for the loss of her friend. Mr. Chair, I think this has been a great discussion, and I hope that I think that members asked really good questions. I hope that they heard clearly that this is to assist with county attorney initiated efforts, that the original jurisdiction still lies with county attorneys, and this would only be in those matters that are of very high significance and seriousness where the county attorneys need that assistance. And we would be getting the office back up to a point almost to where it's been in the past to try to assist these cases. So I thank Attorney General Ellison and his criminal division for all the great work that they do, and I would ask for member support and chair for your consideration down the road.
Thank you, everyone.
Very well. With that, members, the chair lays over House File 3702 for possible inclusion in this committee's omnibus bill. Thank you, Chair Long, and thank you, Attorney General Ellison, and to our county attorneys and Mr. Small as well. Thank you. Members, let me get my... okay, very well. Members, I'm going to move, the chair is going to move to House File, hold on, House File 1442, Representative Shuang, and let me do this first. The chair will move House File 1442 be referred to the General Register. Members, I'm hoping we could do this just a matter of a few seconds. This bill was heard and by us last year. It was referred, it did its path that it needed to do, it went to the floor. It obviously needs to come back here in order for us to keep that in this session, this second year of the session moving. And so we took testimony and debate at that time. And it's my intention that we simply send this back to the floor. I believe there may be some work that will occur at the floor, but at that point, the chair will be working with the members of the floor to be able to shape that bill at that time. And so I do have Representative Shuang here. Perhaps Representative Shuang, if you could say a few brief words about what this bill does, and then I'll call on Lee Johnson, and then hopefully we can move forward. Representative Shuang.
Thank you, Chair Mariani. We're back here again. This bill, House File 1442, it's a revision to the Code of Military Justice. It's an update to the Minnesota Code of Military Justice and relates to statutes that would better reflect the recent changes corresponding to federal law and to remediate potential weaknesses in our existing court-martial process. And we made it almost to the finish line last session, but we were back here. And I do have Mr. Kerr here with me from the Department of Military Affairs, and he can answer any other questions that members might also have. Thank you.
Representative Shuang, we did have pretty extensive testimony last year. I remember some of it actually being quite emotional as well from victims that this would hope to avoid in the future. But Mr. Kerr, you are here, so perhaps I can ask you just to introduce yourself and just give us a very brief 30-second thoughts about the importance of this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am Don Kerr, the Executive Director of the Department of Military Affairs. And this really is an important update to bring Minnesota Code of Military Justice into alignment with the Uniform Code of Military Justice. That's the federal equivalent to that our service members are subject to when they're in federal service. And this just aligns everything nicely. I did some work closing some holes that we worked with the Court of Appeals on to make sure that we had the right language and statute to follow state law with regard to appeals of court martials. And the author did a great job addressing the bill otherwise, and I will stand for any questions, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Kerr. Very thorough work. And what I recall from our testimony with you last year, thank you for leading on this. Members, a quick discussion. Very well. The chair then renews his motion that House File 1442 be referred to the General Register. The clerk will take the roll.
Chair Mariani?
Aye.
Chair Mariani, aye. Vice Chair Frazier? Vice Chair Frazier? Lee Johnson?
Aye.
Lee Johnson, aye. Representative Edelson?
Aye.
Representative Edelson, aye. Representative Feist? Representative Feist, aye. Representative Grossel?
Aye.
Representative Grossel, aye. Representative Hollins?
Aye.
Representative Hollins, aye. Representative Hewitt?
Aye.
Representative Hewitt, aye. Representative Cleavorn?
Cleavorn, aye.
Representative Cleavorn, aye. Representative Long?
Aye.
Representative Long, aye. Representative Lucero?
Lucero, yes.
Representative Lucero, aye. Representative Mueller, excused. Representative Novotny?
Novotny, aye.
Representative Novotny, aye. Representative O'Neill?
O'Neill, aye.
Representative O'Neill, aye. Representative Pinto?
Aye.
Representative Pinto, aye. Representative Poston?
Aye.
Representative Poston, aye. Representative Raleigh?
Raleigh, aye.
Representative Raleigh, aye. Representative Vang?
Aye.
Representative Vang, aye. Representative Shung?
Aye.
Representative Shung, aye. Vice Chair Frazier?
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Sorry, I had a technical issue.
Vice Chair Frazier, aye. Chair with 18 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 excuse. That concludes roll call.
Very well. With 18 ayes, 0 nays, and 1 excuse, the motion prevails, and House File 1442 is on its way to the General Register. Thank you, Representative Shong. A very good bill. Mr. Kerr, thank you for your work on this. It was a lot of work, no doubt. We really appreciate your efforts. With that, members, we now will have a last item on the agenda is a hearing on House File 3974, Representative Igel. Representative Igel. And members, this is an informational hearing on House File 3974. And Representative Igel, you might be on mute. You might not be here. I'm looking through. I'm not seeing Representative Igel's name. Representative Johnson, do you have any idea what might be, what might have happened here?
I'm not sure. I will, maybe our researcher can reach out to him real quick, find out what's going on. I know there's times I've had issues with the link not working as well.
Indeed, yeah.
Chair, I kind of bought this bill if you need help on it.
Representative Hewitt, why don't you tell us what you know about this bill, and maybe that'll give Representative Igel, hopefully, some time to join us.
Chair, Mr. Chair, sorry.
He's online.
Oh, very well. Okay.
We're just about to take a vote in environment. Sorry.
Oh, my goodness. All right, got it. All right, no worries. Welcome. Representative Igel, we have your bill up before us on an informational hearing basis. We may well be also further discussing this during our markup in a couple of weeks, but tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'm really excited and thank you for taking the time today to get this bill heard and talk about this bill. So this is the Public Safety Telecommunicators bill workaround. So this goes back to what we were working on last year with the working group. So the working group was meeting over the summer and they came together with those recommendations for our telecommunicator and our public safety dispatchers. So what this bill is a compilation of professionals who have been working on this for years. Before I even came to the legislature, there was people around the state of Minnesota working on this issue, try and raise awareness for really the first line of defense who keep all of us in Minnesota safe. You know, whenever we need to call for help, whether it be there's a fire, a medical emergency, or just because we don't feel safe, it's a dispatcher who gets that call. So I was really, really humbled and honored to have worked on this bill with that team. Their recommendations were compiled here towards the end of last year. We took those recommendations and we wrote these recommendations now into statute. So I do have some testifiers with me who will kind of go through, and they are actually the chair and co-chair on the working group, and they'll be able to give a great rundown of what's all in this bill, and hopefully we can answer any questions the committee has.
Yeah, well, thank you, Representative. I will find work on this. I note Darlene Pancone with the Washington County Sheriff's Office. If you can come forward, state your name for the record and give us your testimony, we'd appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I remember from last year, it was supposed to be brief and brilliant, if I remember right, sir. So I am Darlene Pancone. I was the vice chair of this working group. I represent the Minnesota chapters of the Association of Public Safety Communications Officials and the National Emergency Number Association. I've been in this industry for over 28 years, working for the city of Minneapolis and then currently the manager at the Washington County Sheriff's Office as well. This bill is going to bring minimum training standards and certifications to the 911 telecommunicators across the state. This is training that is absolutely needed by this frontline staff. It is deserved and it is very much wanted by this personnel. They have so much that they need to do and to represent all the public safety disciplines in their jobs. And this training is essential. It's essential that no matter where you are in a PSAP, a public safety answering point, that you are getting the identical training you need to do your job well and also to combat the stresses and get resiliency in this profession so you can go on for a long time serving the residents of Minnesota. So I just hope, Mr. Chair and representatives, this is a very important bill. This is one of the most important things this legislature has done for 911 in a very long time. Please support House File 3974. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you for your work on this, and thank you for your testimony. And please help the chair pronounce your last name correctly.
Pancone, sir.
Pancone. Okay. Apologies for not getting that right the first time. Thank you. If you could stick around for possible questions, I'd appreciate it.
Sure.
Next, we have LaVey Robinson of the Bloomington Police Department. Supervisor Robinson, welcome.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and representatives, my name is LaVey Robinson, and I'm the Public Safety Telecommunications Supervisor for the City of Bloomington, and I was the chair of the 911 Telecommunicator Work Group. That work group was comprised of over 30 911 professionals from throughout the state, and we came to consensus quite easily for the most part with this recommendation. I've been a telecommunicator for almost 29 years, and 90% of that has been involved in training and quality assurance to make sure that we are providing the best service to our residents, no matter what jurisdiction we're working in. I strongly recommend this group support this bill. It is long overdue, and it is time for 911 telecommunicators around the entire state to have the same training, the opportunity to practice in simulations and things like that prior to taking a live 911 call. They deserve that recognition in their certification, and the training standards are critical to this very complex job that we are doing these days. So thank you, and please support this bill.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Robinson, and also for your work on shaping these recommendations before us. Excuse me, I now see Dana Wahlberg, Director of the Department of Public Safety Emergency Communications Network. Welcome. Please state your name for the record and give us your testimony. And do we have Dana Wahlberg here? So you might be muted.
Mr. Chair, this is Dar Pancone. I don't see Dana.
Ms. Pancone, I think you're right. I don't see her as well. If she does pop up, I'll keep an eye out and we'll try to get her in. I also understand available for questions is Mr. Mark Lalak of the Itasca County Sheriff's Office. Why don't we open this up now for discussion? We'll begin with Representative Hewat. Representative Hewat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I want all the committee members to know I'm very much in support of this bill. This bill is very important. It's been years since we've touched our dispatchers, and they play such an intricate role in first response. they are actually the first responder on the scene because they do the pre-arrival. They make sure things are ready when the EMTs or the police officers get there. This is the first step for them, and I really appreciate their hard work. I looked at their work here, and I'm really impressed with where this is going. So I just want to make sure that everybody on the committee knows how much I support them. And thank you, Representative Igo, for this great work you've done.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Hewlett. Lee Johnson.
Chair Mariani, Representative Igo, thank you for bringing this issue forward. It is, as Representative Hewitt, Representative Grasso, and Representative Novotny understand, our dispatchers are our eyes and ears before we get on scene. The importance of them gathering all the proper information to keep not only the law enforcement, but the fire, the EMS, everybody safe when once they get to the scene by gathering all the proper information, putting it together, and getting the proper people to the scene of the emergency or the situation. Having proper training is key to getting that information. I've worked with great dispatchers overall, and I have worked with the ones that actually should not have been there and could have caused more harm than good that they did. I also have sat in dispatch when I've been on light duty due to an injury, and understand the frustration, the headaches, and the tension and the stress that they also go through getting that information once the officers or somebody gets to the scene, and then not knowing what's going on, knowing that it could be a critical situation. They're just sitting there impatiently waiting to hear that everybody's okay. So I have a lot of gratitude towards our dispatchers. And I think this is going to make the great dispatchers we have even better by everybody getting on the same page with their training, not just in the department itself, but across the state, because there's times that we work with each other across the state, and having all the relevant and proper information is so important to keeping everybody safe. So thank you, Representative Igo.
Thank you, Lee Johnson. I have just a quick question for either the testifiers or for you, Representative Igo. There is a blank appropriation in the language before us. My understanding is that we'll be providing funding for counties to improve their services, including training, certification, et cetera. And that there'll be a switch about how we do that. And so I just want to, I just want to be corrected if I'm wrong about that on the record, that there's going to be a switch from how we currently do that to a grant process over at through the Department of Public Services. And this might be a good question for your testifiers, but I'll begin with you.
Chair, I think I can answer that.
Very well. If you could, just tell us a little bit, put a little bit more meat on the bone.
So, Mr. Chair, in part of the working group, we met with Director Wahlberg. Unfortunately, she's not here right now, from ECN, Emergency Communications Network. And yes, we worked on a fiscal bill that should be attached to this. And that money is going to come from the 911 fees fund from the state to fund this training. And then once the board is created to work on the standards and the certification, future funding will be managed that way. And I believe that's part of the bill as well.
And Ms. Panconi, is it a switch to go through a grant program, or is that just something that's always been done, or what's the advantage of that? In other words, there's a granting process, which I think would mean that different units would be competing for those.
Mr. Chair, Mark Lawlett from Itasca County. I'm the Lieutenant of Communications.
It
will not be a grant. It will be offered to every telecommunicator equally. The fund was figured out on a per person basis. Okay. So each personnel receives the same amount of money for the same amount of training. There will be no competition. Very important that money is already in the 911 fund. So it's not something we'd be going back and asking for more. That money's already there.
Okay. Very well. Thank you, Mr. Lalife. I appreciate you bailing the chair out as he's trying to wrestle around to understand this. And hopefully Representative Igoe will have this conversation again in a couple of weeks. This bill is certainly playable for inclusion. We're doing an informational hearing today, but that's certainly within bounds. Okay, I don't see any further questions, and so I'll have Representative Igoe close us out with a few thoughts, and then we'll adjourn the committee hearing.
All right, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for again having us this hearing today. Thank you to all my testifiers today and other representatives for your comments. This bill really does identify what good public policy is, right? Just the fact that there's 30 different people from all different backgrounds, professionals around the state that came together to get these standards together to keep Minnesotans safe. And that's something we should all be really proud of, and all the members of this committee that worked on that. So thank you. Thank you for the time today. And I hope we can have another chance to dig into this and include this in the omnibus bill so we can get these standards moving and keep Minnesotans safer. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Representative Igoe. Good work. I want to thank your testifiers for testifying and also for the hard work they've put in on this working group over the last year. With that, members, we have no further business. And so until our regular time on Thursday, I'm hearing a voice.
Mr. Chair.
Can you identify yourself? I don't know who's...
Mr. Chair, this is Director Dana Wahlberg from the Emergency Communication Network.
Yeah, we do have 2 or 3 minutes left, so you're so welcome, please.
Okay, thank you, sir. And I apologize. I was on the public link. I had not received the Zoom link, so I was just monitoring and then heard you calling for me. So I was frantically trying to get the link, and I did receive it. So thank you to whoever shared that with me. I can be very brief in just saying that ECN is fully in support of this initiative, and we have prepared the fiscal note. The funds will come from the 911 Special Revenue Fund, and we are prepared to support this not only in the short term, but in the long term, given the essentiality for bringing our telecommunicators up to speed in a certification process, as well as for ongoing continuing education.
Right. Thank you for that additional information and confirmation. I really appreciate it and appreciate your work, Supervisor Wahlberg.
And Mr. Right. Chair, I'd be remiss. I forgot to mention one more thing. I had an email this morning. The Minnesota Sheriff's Association is also in support of this language in this bill and would love to see it become law. I forgot to mention that to the committee today.
Fantastic. Thank you for sharing, Representative Igoe. All right, members, we won't meet again until our regular time on Thursday. So until then, work hard and enjoy your next stay here. And until then, this committee stands adjourned.